I like that one.
Well, the House Committee on Judiciary in Order, Monday, May 16th, 2011. We are going to start in order with Senate Bill 294. We'll open a public hearing. 924, excuse me. Staff, what do we have?
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Senate Bill 924A would direct the Fish and Wildlife Commission to revoke licenses, tags, and permits when a person is convicted of either a felony or Class A misdemeanor relating to the taking of or sale of threatened or endangered species. The court could then determine the time of revocation. It establishes minimum fines for the violations of this section and increases those fines if the individual has a prior conviction for similar conduct.
Okay, could we have Joel Rohleder, Bob Salinger, and I guess it's Candy Platt, please?
Take it over on that side. Okay.
You look like staff today.
I'm sorry.
You can go any order you want. Just identify yourselves before you start.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Bob Salinger. I'm the Conservation Director for the Audubon Society of Portland, and I am here today to testify in favor of SB 924. We have an epidemic of poaching in this state, and that's borne out in many ways. There was a recent ODF&W report that talked about how as much as 50% of the deer taken in this state are poached, and the now deer have fallen below target levels, and that may be part of the cause for that. At Audubon's Wildlife Care Center, we see a steady stream of animals that are illegally shot and otherwise illegally harmed. And particularly, we see birds of prey, birds that have been shot off their nests, shot out of the sky, eagles, peregrine falcons, red-tailed hawks, great horned owls. It's a steady stream. And unfortunately, there are very rarely repercussions when that happens. And so we support the entire bill. The part I want to focus on today, though, is birds of prey. Because I've been working at Audubon since 1992. One of the first animals I worked on was a peregrine falcon that was shot off a light post in northeast Portland. A species at the time was critically endangered. Each week, we see a succession, a stream of birds that are brought in. It costs us hundreds, sometimes thousands of dollars to repair them, to put them back in the sky. And these birds mean an incredible amount to people. These are oftentimes the first entry of people into conservation. They look up and they see a red tail or an eagle, and it inspires them and they become involved. These are also species that we put an incredible amount of resources into restoring. This morning, 3 hours ago, I was rappelling off the Fremont Bridge in downtown Portland, banding peregrine falcon chicks in their nest. That's a species that we spent almost four decades restoring, a species that almost disappeared from the face of the earth. Every year I have between 60 and 70 volunteers out in the field working with Audubon and the state to make sure that those populations are healthy and that they remain healthy because they have made a comeback. And I think when we allow people to shoot these animals, it sends the wrong message to the community about not only the value we put on wildlife, but also the value we put on volunteerism. The problem is that it's very hard to catch folks who do this kind of thing. We just get the tip of the iceberg. The odds that you're going to find a bird of prey that's been shot out of the sky is very, very slim. The odds that you're going to find a bird of prey that's been shot out of the sky and get the person who did it is even slimmer. But it happens all the time, and we do need to send a message. This bill sends a message. We're not after accidents. You have to have a culpable mental state to be prosecuted under this bill. So it's not the situation where somebody accidentally shoots the wrong species, and these species are hard to misidentify. We're after the folks that go after these species intentionally, do egregious crimes, and for the most part, unfortunately, have been getting away from it. I want to end with a quote because a couple years ago, we worked on peregrine falcons off the St. John's Bridge. During their construction project, we had to take eggs off the nest, raise them in captivity, and release them to the wild. It was kind of a big deal. It got a lot of media. We released five of them on Ridgefield National Wildlife Refuge, and we learned after the fact that every single one of those birds apparently was shot out of the sky, and the people were bragging about it on their websites. These were pigeon fanciers in this case, who, because birds of prey eat pigeons, decided they would blow these birds out of the sky. And this is the quote that they published on an openly available website. "I laughed and I laughed when I heard the story because of all the hard, painstaking measures to get these birds to adolescence, and then to have someone take them out was simply bliss. Use the 3S system, shoot, shovel, and shut up." We see osprey shot off of nests with their young left to starve. We had a bald eagle come in recently that was shot. There's another one that came in at the coast. We've had a red tail in the last couple weeks that was shot. This bill is the right thing to do for our heritage, for our community investments, and for our local economy. So we urge you to pass it, and we really appreciate the work of Senator Boquist and Co-Chair Krieger on this bill as well. Thank you.
Okay. Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Candace Plant, and I reside in the Charbonneau District of Wilsonville, Oregon. I am here today taking time off for work, driving from Portland. I am employed as a tax accountant and work for a CPA firm in the Portland area, but I felt it very important for me to be here today and to testify in support of this bill. I am a businesswoman, and I recognize the incredible economic value that these birds bring to our state and our community. Bird watchers buy expensive cameras, which you need to photograph wildlife, spotting scopes, and spend money to go on birding trips that are local and throughout our state. I have a group up at Audubon that I go birding with each month at one of the Portland area's many wildlife refuges. We call ourselves the Oven Birds, and in addition to bird watching, we look for a restaurant in the area after our outing to eat lunch and to talk about the wonderful morning we had counting the different species of birds. I've been volunteering for Audubon Society of Portland's Wildlife Care Center for 20 years. 4 years ago, I actually quit my full-time job at a CPA firm to work part-time so that I could volunteer more time up at Audubon. I have been averaging around 700 volunteer hours a year. That means I have been giving up in wages $15,708 per year to volunteer those 700 hours. I volunteer a day each week at the Wildlife Care Center, which starts at 9 a.m. and can end at 8 p.m. That equivalents to an 11-hour day. I also volunteer on other days of the week as I am an educational bird handler for 8 birds that were brought to the Wildlife Care Center. But because of their injuries or being kept illegally as pets, they are not able to be released back in the wild. I've also been part of Audubon Society's Peregrine Falcon Recovery Program, which started in the mid-90s at the Fremont Bridge. Audubon Society volunteers have spent countless hours each year from January through July monitoring the nest site for the safety of the baby peregrine falcons. And we have given the city of Portland a chance to see these magnificent birds up close through a spotting scope and to hear their story on how they have recovered from being listed as endangered. All the volunteer work that myself and Audubon's 100 Wildlife Care Center volunteers are doing is for nothing if the state allows people to just go out and shoot these birds with virtually no repercussions. It is absolutely heartbreaking for me to hold a red-tailed hawk while it is being administered a lethal injection for euthanasia by our staff veterinarian because of a gunshot injury. And the really sad part, though, is that the following day, one of my co-volunteers will possibly be repeating what I had done the prior day, also holding a raptor that has been shot and will have to be euthanized. The state of Oregon needs the countless hours that I and other volunteers spend to help the state achieve its conservation goals. But I am worried that the state of Oregon will lose the efforts of the volunteers like me if our investment is not protected. It is an incredible thing to see a peregrine falcon or a bald eagle flying over downtown Portland. I am not speaking as a politician, biologist, or corporate business owner, but as a dedicated volunteer who loves our state, and ask that our state legislature please pass Senate Bill 924 and provide these birds with the protection that they deserve. Thank you.
Chair Barker, Chair Krieger, members of the committee, my name is Joe Rollator. I'm here today representing the Mackenzie River Guides Association and Seafood Oregon. Seafood Oregon is a consortium of the four commodity commissions that harvest commercial fish on the ocean, the crab, Dungeness Crab Commission, the Salmon Commission, the Albacore Commission, and the Trawl Commission, which is also the Shrimp Commission. We've been involved in writing Senate Bill 924 and bills like it for several sessions because those of us who are on watershed councils, work with conservation, we realize the value of the wildlife. And some people are repeat offenders, and they seem to be continually getting away with those offenses. We've asked for a Dash 5 amendment to this bill, which would take Section 1 out of the bill, and that refers to the State Endangered Species Act. And the reason we took that out is that this, whenever anybody starts to read this bill, they look at that, and it brings up the State Endangered Species Act, and the list is very long. I don't believe the list is very well maintained. And so in commercial fisheries, sometimes we catch unintended species like smelt. We catch them when they're about that big. And if we were to bring, if this bill were to pass without the Dash 5 amendments, and we were to bring in our catch, and in many fisheries nowadays, commercial fishermen are required to bring in, it's 100% retention. We have to bring everything in that we catch. We have observers aboard all the time. And if we brought in some unintentionally caught species that's on this list, then we'd be subject to some very severe fines. I understand that Section 1 only applies to the revocation of sport licenses, but even to many of us commercial fishermen, our sports licenses are how we spend our spare time. You heard about hawks and how they're handled in on the third page of this bill and other raptors. I want to talk about sturgeon a little bit. White sturgeon spawn in the Columbia River. It's one of the few places left in the world where white sturgeon spawn. And we manage that fishery very, very closely. And the biologists tell us that all of the sturgeon over about 5.5 feet long are hens, the females, and they spawn just below Bonneville. Anybody who would take one of these very big, valuable hens should be subject to some special punishment, if you will. And, you know, they're really valuable. Somebody who intentionally takes that knows they're taking a hen that's that big, and they should get whacked for it. As far as how this law would be enforced, I think mostly this sends a message to folks that are repeated offenders or people that are very egregious about shooting birds that are protected, that they're going to be subject to some special, more grievous penalties if they continue to do these kinds of things. And I also I've talked to the state police game enforcement about this, and they tell me that they'll continue to use their discretion. This gives them another level of punishment. They can cite the person in a particular way. We all, as sportsmen, can go to the DA and say, please prosecute this under this new law. So that's the reason I'm here. I've fished and hunted my entire life. I've done it commercially. And I think these fish and wildlife are very important. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, I support the bill. I shared Joe's concerns about inadvertent take, but I was walking my dog in Happy Valley Park, and these two peregrine falcons, I think they were mates, were flying right at me chasing a squirrel. It was just right out of Wild Kingdom. It was incredible. So I thank you for your efforts. And I also, this weekend, my daughter and I watched you had a documentary on PBS. It was really good. And it got me thinking, You know, I support bridges, new bridges, bigger the better. That's what I'm for. But do we take into account, or do we think about our design of our bridges for these nesting raptors in human-made structures these days? Because we're going to be building some brand new bridges. Are we taking that into consideration?
We do. In fact, the new pedestrian bridge over the Willamette has a peregrine platform designed into it, and I'm sure the new I-5 bridge, whatever it turns out to be, will as well. There are peregrines nesting on that bridge and have been for several years. Right. So ODOT's been a real partner in this, actually, for a long time, and they were out there with us this morning helping us out.
All right, thanks.
We also do support the amendment, by the way. I should have said that Joe referenced. I'm sorry. Did not mention that earlier.
Bob, how would you address... we've talked about this in our work with the time or two. You know, you have free-range chickens. You have kids that got 4-H furs. And if you get a, what used to be called a chicken hawk, the continuous preying on that. Historically, we all know that farmer shot that hawk to protect his property. What are these people are supposed to do now if they get a bird of that type that just continues to prey till there's nothing left?
They should get a permit from U.S. Fish and Wildlife. The Fish and Wildlife Service will issue one to deal with it. They have relocated hawks on rare occasions, but it also is part of the price of doing business. They won't take out your entire flock. They'll take out occasionally ones that are available, but I'll be honest with you that... these are protected species. We've made a decision to protect them. The only way to take them is with a permit, and I think that's the only circumstances under which it should be allowed. Much of what we're seeing, though, is just egregious take. It's just people out there blowing them away. It's also people not being responsible for their animals and doing the things that they need to do to protect them from birds of prey.
Any members? Anybody else? Okay, thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Al Elkins, Tom Wolf, and Elizabeth Kushwa.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee. For the record, Al Elkins with the Oregon Hunters Association. We support Senate Bill 924A, and we are against poaching. And we appreciate the process by which we went through and appreciate Representative Krieger and Senator Boquist's time and efforts in putting this bill together. And that's about all I can say. I think this bill is good for wildlife and very good to help stop poaching. I really do. Thank you.
Co-Chairs Barker and Co-Chair Krieger, committee members, my name is Tom Wolf. I'm the chair of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited. I'm part of the nation's largest cold water conservation group. I'm here today to voice Trout Unlimited's support of House Bill 924 and its most recent amendment. Just to share a story, about a week and a half ago, I was on the Willamette fishing for spring Chinook. And late in the afternoon, my rod got a bite, and as it took off, it couldn't raise it. We thought it was a Chinook, and then as I was trying to reel up, we realized it may be something else. And just about that time, coming up out of the air with a large splash was a 9-foot sturgeon that as soon as we realized what it was, we broke it off and made sure it got away. But we currently have a problem right now in Oregon about people illegally taking a large, over 6-foot sturgeon that are the spawning stock, as Joe Rowlater related earlier, of the white sturgeon. At one time, below Bonneville Dam, there were 1 million white sturgeon. It was the largest population of white sturgeon, not just in the United States, but in the world. And slowly but surely, that population has dropped. And one of the problems is we have people illegally taking large, oversized spawning—the spawning population of the sturgeon—not as an accident, but deliberately. And this bill would send a message and incite deeper penalties on people that pursue these white sturgeons on a deliberate basis. And this is a magnificent population of fish that provides tremendous amount of recreational opportunities for people, tremendous economic opportunities for the towns that they come in to fish for this. We have people that come in from all over the country to fish for these white sturgeon on the Columbia, and they need to be protected. So we support this bill. We support also for what it does with wildlife and bird populations. We think it's a great bill. We thank Senator Boquist and Representative Krieger for all the work they've done in this bill. We think and we urge you to support this bill also. Thank you.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, Elizabeth Kushwa for the Oregon District Attorneys Association. We worked on a limited basis on this bill, trying to initially mitigate some of the very large fines that were initially considered in the bill because of constitutional issues. We were afraid that there was a proportionality problem around those. We worked very successfully with the committee to kind of put those in line. In terms of the revocation piece that is being excised in the Dash 5s, I don't have a legislative committee opinion on this, but I do know that revocation is a very big hammer for this population, and when the period of time is determined by the court, it can be as long or as short as the court decides. So I think at that point we're probably neutral on the amendment, happy to have been involved in the bill, and when the bill goes forward, if there are additional amendments, we'll be able to come back to you with a firmer position. Thank you.
Elizabeth, can you state for the record what the penalty would have been without this bill for these same things?
Representative, no, I can't.
I would have asked you if they didn't think you knew. Let's check
with you in advance.
So they could, now, without this bill, if the court decided, they could give them $6,250 fine, 1 year in jail, the confiscation of any and all equipment from boats, motors, dogs, that were used in the violation, and licensing suspensions, I think up to 3 years. The problem seems to be that the courts aren't recognizing the seriousness of the more egregious type things, and therefore hunters and anglers are getting frustrated with the court's lack of action. I did have a conversation with our Chief Justice, who's going to be talking, I believe, to the courts a little bit, some of the judges. Committee, you have any other questions in the group? Ms. Tomei?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wolf, I understand one of the reasons that people try to catch the large sturgeon is because of the eggs. Do you have any sense on how much the eggs might profit a person on, say, a 9-foot sturgeon?
Well, co-chairs Barker and Krieger, Representative Tomei, well, part of the problem right there is that there's a size limit for what you can keep, and the large ones are actually they're outside the size limit of what you can keep anyway. But I don't know, I'm not being a caviar expert. I imagine that the eggs of a large sturgeon and drop the top of my head would be worth tens of thousands of dollars. So it's very valuable. That is one of the reasons why there are people that do target it. So.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Ms. Kushwa, I'm trying to get a handle on Section 1B where they talk about revocation is left to the determined by the court. And isn't it the case that typically when we have a statute that leaves something to the discretion of the court, we put some idea in the statute to give the court guidance and direction about what we mean and what factors ought to be considered and things like that?
Co-chairs, Representative Vaughn, it's true that often that happens, but not in all cases. In this case, I think the problem you'd have with this is the fact that you'd have wildly divergent opinions depending on the county you're dealing with in the courts. I mean, the hunting and fishing population, losing that equipment, losing that license is a very big deal in places that it is less of a big deal in others. And so I would be more, in terms of that, if you wanted to put sidebars on it, I'm sure that's something further we could consider.
At what point does this type of unfettered discretion on the part of a judge with no direction from the legislature, county by county, with disparate results, at what point does that raise an equal protection issue where in Douglas County, you've got a judge that's regularly yanking these things for 10 years, and in Clackamas County, you have a judge that never exceeds 18 months on the same circumstances. Is there an equal protection concern at some point?
Co-chairs, Representative Wan, and I'm sure Representative Hicks can weigh in here as well. There's an argument to be made there, but there has been historically arguments to be made in that regard in almost any of the criminal laws when discretion has been left up to the judges. So I feel that that's up for discussion.
And on the same line, then, if this bill were to become law, wouldn't we have to wait as the Court of Appeals over the course of years heard cases and heard challenges to this statute? And wouldn't we then have to wait for the appellate courts to establish those sidebars in those standards unless we write them into the statute ourselves?
Co-chairs, Representative Wan, that's certainly a possibility.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And then I have a question for the gentleman from Trout Unlimited, and thank you for coming down today. I'm intrigued by one of the comments in your letter here, talking about the oversized white sturgeon. I'm just curious, how does a person count the number of white sturgeon below the Bonneville Dam?
Carefully. sea lion.
Yeah. Co-chairs, Representative Wan, that's a good question. A lot of it is done on records. A lot of it is done by estimates. A lot of it is done by spawning, observing the fish spawning. So a lot of it is estimates by Fish and Wildlife. That's a good question. So we do know that the population has crashed quite a bit. So that's, you know, we're seeing that more and more. So in the observations that ODFW is doing, we have seen it has crashed quite a bit from that million that I mentioned before. So
just one last follow-up, if I may, Mr. Co-Chair, and thank you to the rest of the committee. How does a poacher of a, say, 7.5-foot white sturgeon, how do they get that thing out without anybody noticing?
Co-chairs, Representative Wan, well, they one of several ways. One, they just do it at night when nobody's, I mean, they break another law there, but they fish at night and catch them illegally, or in a location where there's no one else around, or sometimes in blatantly in front of other people. So one of those three ways.
Representative Hicks, do you have a question?
Just a note, line of questioning, previous nature, probably my hunch is it was part of the discussion that led to the -5 amendments would strike that entire portion of the bill, and therefore no longer be a concern if we were to adopt the -5 amendments. So that would be my understanding of status of things we were for the -5.
Anything else, committee? Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Senator Boulquist, at last, I want you to be clean up.
I am last, right?
Sure. As far as I know.
Okay. Co-Chair Krieger, Co-Chair Barker, distinguished colleagues from the upper chamber. I'll be humble today because I want the bloody thing to pass. I should give you, for those of you who have not been here four sessions, I'll just give you a quick background. This is the fourth session this issue has come up. Co-Chair Krieger was kind enough to remind me that I couldn't call people in the work group long hairs, but I did anyway. This is an interesting bill in the fact that first the animal groups came to me at the beginning of the session looking for the odd couple, I think, and said, well, we have this issue, and yeah, this is the fourth session, I'm not interested in this issue, go find someone else. And then very shortly after, those in very rural Oregon, say those God-fearing gun-toting, you know, hunters came up and said, we have this same issue again, and this is the fourth session. It's like, look, we've dealt with this four times, we've never come to a compromise. Well, let's try one more time. So we went through a Cat of Nine Lives work group to get to this, in which I said, okay, look, I don't want to spend any more time in this unless everybody's going to agree. So we'll send the draft out to everybody, and then we'll have a meeting, and then everybody that wants to strike something from this can strike it from this bill. And that was the first go-round. And then we took everybody's suggestions and put it back in, and we went through about three or four rotations in which Co-Chair Krieger was involved in this. And if somebody had a problem with something, we struck it, so that we came to a complete compromise all the way across the board. Now, as typical lives that go to the floor to get voted on, the second it hit the floor of the Senate, somebody forgot something. And so the issue that came up immediately was the recreational versus commercial license on the first page, and we talked about how to amend that because of the smelt issue that you heard, so on and so forth. So we said, all right, we'll just, since it wasn't raised in the group before, we sent another letter out and said, all right, we'll just cut that one too, so that we have a consensus of what we're going to do on egregious offenses that are here. I, too, like Co-Chair Krieger, was worried about court discretion that was raised by Representative Juan. In the first time around, the court has discretion already. Even in the first paragraph in the dash 5, which isn't the final amendment, where it says, you know, the court can revoke licenses for a period determined by the court. The court already has discretion like that existing law. It's not like we're creating anything new. So they already have that. My discussion with the Chief Justice was pretty much the same as what Co-Chair Krieger was, and that is, the court, we have this problem. We're spending hundreds of thousands, if not millions of tax dollars to save them. We have egregious offenders, which people who have been with the state police know they're out there. There's not very many of them, but they're out there. And so how to resolve this, and, you know, the response I got from the Chief Justice is, you're the legislature. Obviously, you see a problem, and if you want to implement it, we'll implement what you want. But again, we still have that court has to have discretion the first time around, and so we're at this lowest common denominator. So really, I'm sitting here. We got about 6 lives left for this cat. I've heard the issue in which we put up for the dash 5. I've heard an issue that's arisen about personal gain on page 3, and I am open to whatever the committee would like us to do to get the dash 6, which will bring us a cat of 5 lives, and we can go down at least to 1 life on the cat. So I can probably get to about the dash 9 in the next 3 days, whatever the committee would like to do so that we can address this issue. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairs.
Is that a cat, a cougar?
In my district, it is, but you heard the description about shoot, shovel, and shut up, so I won't go any farther, Representative.
I need to spend some time with you if you make it a day or two or three.
I'd be delighted to spend time with you, and whatever we need to do work, we can go from there. Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee.
And I want to thank Senator Boquist and you for the work you've done on this. I remember back in the early 70s when I was a game warden with the state police, there was a case where somebody had actually, when the peregrines were really limited and endangered, somebody had captured a couple and sold them to somebody in the Middle East, and the judge was outraged and fined him $25.
Oh.
And, you know, you see things like that or massive poaching where the judge wouldn't seize the weapons and so on, which is judicial discretion. But I think this does kind of lift the thing. Also, we've noticed part, I think a couple of things are really after that, the sturgeon in the Columbia stem. One of them is quite a bit of pressure down below the Magler-Astoria Bridge. When the salmon, when that kind of went away, people, the commercial fishermen, the guides started fishing those fish. And we have sea lions unmolested up at Bonneville Dam that are just really eating those young sturgeon. So it's all kinds of things, but especially people poaching those big fish. And I've seen gillnetters land the big 9-footer up there. It used to be one up by Bonneville, and they would be treated like one of their children, treated gently to get it back in the water. But you never know who's not going to do that. So I really appreciate your effort in bringing these bills forward, and especially for the raptor birds that were the groups that I remember St. John's people up there would write about shooting them out of the sky with around the pigeon coop. So thank you.
Mr. Co-Chair Krieger and Co-Chair Burke, I appreciate that comment because, again, I originally said no this session. I've heard this for 4 times, and I don't want to sit in a room with 25 of my closest and not so closest friends and come up with an agreement. But they all said, let's at least try one go around, and it was very surprising. There were people who sat in that room that went through this bill who have never sat in the same room other than a hearing room, I think, in their lives.
Anything further, committee?
Thank you.
Okay, we'll close a public hearing on Senate Bill 924. And Joe, I need to have you, Senator Boquist, get into my office on that bill.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 71.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Senate Bill 71 would allow recipients of GEDs to become eligible for polygraph examiner licenses under the status quo. A potential polygraph examiner must be a graduate of an accredited high school. Senate Bill 71 is expected to have no revenue or fiscal impact.
There are no amendments.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 71 to the floor to be passed.
Co-Chair Barker has moved Senate Bill 71 to the floor to do pass. Any comments on the bill? Call the roll.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shoffler?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative Wong?
Aye.
Representative Whitman?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Hare?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett?
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker?
Aye.
Senate Bill 71 will pass. Senator to do pass. Anyone want to carry it? Representative Barker? Open a work session on Senate Bill 77A.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Senate Bill 77A would place limits on an inmate's ability to file small claims. It would prohibit, basically it would put down an exhaustion requirement, prohibit an inmate from bringing small claims actions against other inmates, require notice to be served on a public body, therefore keeping the public body from defaulting for lack of notice, requiring the inmate to serve the state attorney general and the public body as a state agency, and makes other modifications. This bill is expected to have a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 77A to the floor to do pass.
Richard Barker moves Senate Bill 77A to the floor to do pass. Any questions or discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative
Olson? Aye. Representative Shoffler? Aye. Representative Tomei? Yes. Representative Wong?
Aye.
Representative
Whitman?
Aye.
Co-Vice
Chair
Hare?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett?
Aye.
Co-Chair
Krieger?
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker?
Aye.
Senate Bill 77 passes. To do pass. Anyone
want
to carry it? Representative
Wong,
you
want I'll
to
carry it. Yeah, I'll carry it. It's fine.
Wong will do it this time.
I don't know why we have to do this, Mr. Chair. I don't think we should have anything. But
sir?
Nothing, sir. Everything's fine.
You want
to break
bills?
Your microphone?
No, no. I'm doing great.
Open a work session on Senate Bill 373.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Senate Bill 373 would modify the filing requirements surrounding criminal forfeiture. Basically, this is a bill that will introduce filing electronically as opposed to via hard copy. There's a dash 2 amendment that has been advanced by the proponents. First of all, it would require somebody making electronic filing to provide a little bit more detail in the initial than in the initial version in terms of describing the property seized and the circumstances of the seizure and also the judgment and manner in which any forfeited property was collected and the proceeds from any forfeiture distributed. It would give to the Asset Forfeiture Oversight Advisory Committee the ability to promulgate additional rules for additional information to be included in subsequent electronic reports in the future. It also makes changes to the way that the Asset Forfeiture Oversight Account is handled, and this is on page 4 of the amendment. It deletes section 5, which basically says if this fund goes in excess of 115% of its biennial expenditure limitation, a refund would be made to each public body that made payment to the account. It deletes that section. As amended, this is by the dash 2, assuming its adoption, it is expected to have a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Any discussion on the amendments? This is the first I've heard of them.
That is correct.
Do you want to talk about it? Okay. We're going to carry the bill over. We'll close a public hearing on it now.
Work session,
excuse me. And make sure we understand what those amendments do. Okay, we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 383.
co-chairs, members of the committee. Senate Bill 383 has to do with the way in which notice of a residential defect is sent. This would allow such notice to be sent by certified mail. It would exempt small claims and counterclaims relating to the contract alteration repair of a residence from this requirement and permit notice to be provided by certified mail in addition to registered mail. Senate Bill 383 is expected to have a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact. There are no additional amendments.
Mr. Chair, move Senate Bill 383 to the floor of the due pass.
Mr. Chair Barker, move Senate Bill 383 to the floor of the due pass. Any discussion on the bill? Call the roll.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative
Tomei? Yes. Representative Watt?
Aye.
Representative
Whitman? Aye.
Co-Vice Chair
Hayes?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett?
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker?
Aye.
Representative Shaw,
would you like to carry that?
I'd be happy to.
I'm enthusiastic about it.
I could tell. Close the work session on Senate Bill 383 and open the work session on Senate Bill 396.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Senate Bill 396 would modify the rules regulating the sheriff's ability to serve a copy of a protective order. First of all, it would allow them to serve a copy of a protective order that they received electronically. Secondly, it allows an order to modify the restraining order when that's being made less restrictive to be served by mail under some circumstances. It also provides rules for what should happen when a police officer accompanies a restrained person to their household in order for them to gather essential personal effects, stating that the individual will have only 20 minutes to gather those personal effects and that they'll only be able to do so once. And it grants the peace officer civil and criminal liability from all liability incurred by the restrained person during the gathering of those effects. Senate Bill 396 is expected to have no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 396A to the floor with the due pass.
Chair Barker has moved Senate Bill 396A to the floor with the due pass. Any discussion on the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I do support the bill going forward. I just want to note, in case somebody should be looking back on this record someday, which I hope doesn't happen because that means somebody is arguing a legal point that's not resolvable or resolved yet, which is as to 7D, what happens when an officer goes to a restrained person's house. We did have a meeting of lawyers, the drafter of this bill, and another member of our legal counsel, myself, met, debated the issue. It was basically concluded that there's no constitutional or case law guidance in this area. There are similar statutes that have apparently not been challenged one way or the other. The issue, which was sort of brought up during the initial hearing and is what I'm talking about right now, is that basically why is the peace officer there? A peace officer can arrest, as contemplated in the section of the bill, based on probable cause from any evidence he gains from a lawful vantage point. So the officer being in the person's house, is that or is that not a lawful vantage point? And where we basically came down was... and next thing, let me back up before I go there. What the bill says is that if the restrained person, pursuant to the order, wants to go to their own house and remove their essential personal effects, then they must take a police officer with them. Of course, when the officer gets there, the officer can gain probable cause from witnessing evidence of a crime, make an arrest, on we go. And it can be a crime of any nature. They see marijuana, for example. So what we basically were thinking in why I'm okay with the advancement of this bill is that it comes down to consent. This is a colorable argument that if the restrained person does not want the police officer in their house, then they don't have to go back to their house. Basically, this is the condition which is appropriate given the public safety considerations that the state needs to protect. This is a condition that if the person wants to go back to their house, they need to consent, if you will, to having a peace officer come with them. So. There is no precedent for this. That's but I think one way or the other, we're...
I think you're probably going to have an opportunity to explain that on the floor.
I'll do that. I'll carry this one on the floor. I'll carry it on the floor. But I just want the men in black robes to know that this wasn't something we completely ignored in passing the bill. We don't have the answer. Maybe they do.
What he said.
Call the roll, please.
Representative Baldwin? Yes. Representative Baldwin?
Yes.
Representative Goffler.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Wan.
Aye.
Representative Lisnett.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Hicks.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett.
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker.
Aye.
Okay, Senate Bill 396A will pass on the floor with the Duke Best and Representative Hicks.
Thank you.
Okay. And I don't believe we have anything else before the committee.
No.
So we're adjourned.